Packing the Court is our topic for this particular segment of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Mike Berry, who's an attorney with First Liberty. First Liberty fights for religious liberty in the courts of America and in the courts of public opinion. Mike, welcome back to the program. Thanks to have it's great to have you again.
That's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks for joining us. Okay. So, first of all, let's define what we mean by packing the courts. I heard somebody, one of those on the left, was blaming or accusing former President Trump of packing the courts when he was appointing somebody to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which was his constitutional duty. And then that was supposedly packing the court because it happened during an election year. Well, that's not redefining, or that is redefining the term. So let's go ahead and unpack this whole idea of packing the courts.
Yeah, well, you know, historically, going back to the early days of our country, packing the court has always been understood to mean when a party or a president tries to add seats to a particular court, usually the Supreme Court, and then they get to pick, you know, hand pick who they want to fill those vacancies, those new vacancies. That's what we mean when we say packing the court. What President Trump did was, as you indicated, was simply fulfilling his constitutional duty, right? The Constitution says that the president gets to appoint justices or judges to fill any vacancies, and then the Senate has to confirm them. Packing the court, quite differently, is, as I just said, it's actually adding new seats to a court and then handpicking who you want to fill those seats so that you can stack the odds in your favor. That's what's going on right now with President Biden and the far left, you know, radical elites in Congress, and that's not constitutional.
Hmm. So if they had their druthers, what they would do is add, as I understand it, four more seats to the U.S. Supreme Court. So instead of being a 9-person body, it would be 13.
Yeah, at minimum, right? That's sort of their baseline. And the reason is, if you just do the math, right? Right now, the Supreme Court, by most calculations, most people would agree that the Supreme Court has a 6-3 conservative majority, 6 conservative justices, 3 liberal justices. And so if you add 4 more seats to that, then you end up with a 7-6 liberal majority on the court, which is exactly what the far left wants, at minimum. Now, if they had their way, I suspect they would tell you that why stop with 4? You know, why not add 6, right, or 8, so that they can really cement that majority and lock it down for generations to come. And the other thing we need to keep in mind is they're not necessarily willing to stop with the Supreme Court. They're also looking at the lower courts, the district courts, and our circuit courts of appeal. And the reason that's so important to keep an eye on that is, you know, less than 1% of all cases end up at the U.S. Supreme Court. That mm-hmm. means that 99% of all the cases that are brought in federal courts, they terminate in those lower courts, either at the district court or at the courts of appeal. And so, while they can certainly achieve a huge coup, and at First Liberty Institute we call it a coup because that's exactly what this is. Anytime you attempt to overthrow a branch of the government, you call it a coup. That's the definition of coup. So if they can't have their coup at the Supreme Court, they at least want to try to accomplish it at the lower courts. And then that way, what they're, you know, in other words, the cases that go to the Supreme Court, those might constitute a qualitative version of court packing, because of course the Supreme Court handles the biggest, most important cases in the country, and what they can't do there, they're willing to try to get quantitatively at the lower courts, because as I said, 99% of all of our cases in federal courts end up or terminate in those lower courts. So it's a little bit complicated, but you know, that's what we're following very, very closely at First Liberty, and we've unleashed a campaign to combat this attempt to pack the courts and institute a coup in our judiciary.
One question. You said 6 conservatives versus 3 liberals, and yet it is true that Chief Justice Roberts sometimes votes with the liberal minority And sometimes it's very disturbing. So, for example, there was a recent case out of California involving religious freedom. If I, you know, understand things right, I'm sure First Liberty was on the side of the conservatives on this. And thankfully, there was a conservative majority. But the vote was 5-4, the fourth vote being from Chief Justice Roberts. So I'm not sure I would call him a consistent conservative by any means.
Yeah, you know, the Chief Justice is obviously an interesting character, and it's interesting to look at his positions and opinions. We probably don't have time here today to get down into the weeds on Chief Justice Roberts' judicial philosophy. Maybe we can do that another time, which would be, I think, pretty interesting to do. It's somebody that I've studied his positions and opinions quite a bit, trying to sort of figure out where he is on these things. But you're right. By most, you know, conservative standards, the Chief Justice does not always rule the way that we would like him to, particularly when it comes to constitutional issues. The Chief, I'll just summarize it like this.
Yeah.
The Chief Justice it very much values consensus, and he very much values tradition and procedure. He does not like to rock the cart, the apple cart, so to speak, when it comes to overturning acts of the legislature, or when it comes to disturbing what he views as important precedent. And so that those are important things to keep in mind when you're trying to appeal to Chief Justice Roberts and to get his vote. But I will say he does vote with the conservatives on a number of important issues as well. So I think the way we would describe it is he may not necessarily be a reliable conservative when it comes to cases that are important to people on the conservative side of the spectrum, but he does rule consistent with his own principles, and so you just have to understand what it is that he values and what he's trying to promote there on the court.
So if I could ask, I mean, since we brought up this very topic in reference to the 5-4 decision related to, I guess it was Bible studies, are Bible studies allowed in California in private homes during this time of COVID-19? And Roberts actually voted with the minority. No, they're not allowed. And it's like, I don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact, as I was, attempted to explain at least, that Chief Justice Roberts views, he's looking at this from the perspective of, does the state have the ability to do this, right? I mean, this is a time of declared pandemic. There have been a lot of deaths, tragically, and does the state have the right to take actions in order to try to stop the spread of a pandemic? And he certainly believes that the state has the right to do that. And so the real question is, then when the state's right to do that comes up against individual liberties and freedoms, so how does that balance out, right? And I think most of us believe that the individual liberty is superior and therefore should trump the state's rights.
I see.
Chief Justice Roberts doesn't always see it that way. Obviously he has voted in favor of religious freedom during, in some cases, dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, but not always. You don't hear conservatives saying, well, in that case, we need to add more seats on the Supreme Court and find people that we think, you know, are going to vote our way. And so why is it that the far left and the progressive left thinks that that's the solution, right? That, we didn't get what we want, so we're going to just completely change the rules to suit our interests, and then we're going to stack the deck and stack the court with the people that we want. That's the thing those are the types of actions you see from dictators and despotic regimes like, you know, Russia, Venezuela, China, North Korea. That's not what you're supposed to see in the United States of America. So at First Liberty Institute, we're sounding the alarm on this, and we encourage people to go to supremecoup.com, not supremecourt.com, but supremecoup, COUP.com, so you can learn the truth behind what the far left is trying to do to overtake our courts.
So this is no idle issue by any means. The Constitution itself does not specify how many members of the Supreme Court should be there. It just says that basically the High Court has the right, you know, it's it it's it trumps all other courts throughout the land. Now, how many decades has it been since 9 has been the number on the Supreme Court? At least it goes back to the 1800s, correct? The late 1800s?
It was the Judiciary Act of 1869. Right at the end of the Civil War was the last time that we had a change in the number of justices, and you're correct, that's when it was set at 9. So we've had 9 justices on the Supreme Court for roughly 150 years.
Wow.
And if you look back historically, right, well, another thing that the far left is trying to do is they're trying to use disinformation to persuade people that this is something that happens all the time. This is just normal part of American judicial process, and that's a flat out lie.
Yeah.
Right? Historically the most frequent reason for a change in the number of justices on the Supreme Court has been because in order to expand the number of seats was going back to the early 19th century, right? So the early 1800s, and that's because back then we didn't have the internet, and we didn't have computers, and we didn't, social media and things like that. So when the justices were hearing cases, they actually had to travel by horseback, right, or horse-drawn carriage physically to the places where the cases were being heard. We didn't have Zoom, conferences to hear Supreme Court cases back then.
Yeah, can I add something to this? This is where that word circuit comes from. Circuit Court of Appeals. They were the riders, the judges, as horseback riders were making the circuit to their,
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, sorry.
That's exactly right. And so they called it riding circuit, and they would actually have to travel because back then the justices, they were responsible for hearing cases in the circuits where those cases arose. And so if you were in, New York or Philadelphia or Washington, D.C. or whatever, and there was a case that arose in Georgia, guess what? You had to get in a horse-drawn carriage and travel, days or weeks to get down to Georgia to hear that case. Now, obviously in this era, today, we don't have that issue anymore, but as the United States began to expand and grow westward, we had to add new circuits, right? So that you began to have the Louisiana Territory, Louisiana and Texas, and then continue to expand further westward. So that as they added the number of circuits to our federal courts, they had to add more justices to cover those circuits because you couldn't have a justice covering a case in New York this week and then say, oh, hey, by the way, you got to go hear a case in Colorado next week. It just wouldn't work logistically. It was logistically impossible. So they had to have a new justice to handle that. That's why we added seats to the Supreme Court historically. And as we talked about, we haven't added any additional seats since the end of the Civil War. So don't let the far left get away with this smoke and mirrors argument about, we've added seats before. It's no big deal. Yeah. For completely different reasons, and we haven't. And the last time we tried to add seats the way that the far left is trying to do it now, which was simply for political agenda purposes, it was in 1937 with FDR's infamous court packing plan. And guess what? That one crashed and burned in Congress. Why? Because the American people erupted in outrage. The Senate erupted in outrage. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court testified against the plan, saying that this is a terrible idea, and so did FDR's own vice president. He actually said this is a terrible idea, it's going to politicize the courts. And finally, guess who else called FDR's court packing plan a bonehead idea? None other than President Biden himself.
Huh, that's so fascinating. Okay, we have 30 seconds left. This is no arcane issue. This is no, who cares if this happens. No, this could have direct impact on the future of the country. 30 seconds.
This is the greatest threat to our Constitution, Jerry. The plan or the attempt to try to pack our courts and institute a coup to take over the judiciary, right? Because what it will do is it will centralize all the power, all the political power into one arm of the government and in one political party. That is the greatest threat to our Constitution right now.
FirstLiberty.org, also
SupremeCoup.com. Supremecoup.com.
Mike Berry, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thanks for having me.